you haven't looked at the weather forecast for next week, go do it now because it looks like fall is finally here. I'm looking at it just to make sure it didn't change between this morning and this afternoon. But, boy, I tell you, once we get past Tuesday, a little bit of rain between now and then, Tuesday's high is 84. You get into Wednesday, you get highs in the mid-70s, lows down in 58, 59. I mean, that's getting close to fire weather if you're at my house. Fire weather and a bowl of chili with a little bit of sweet Memphis barbecue sauce on it. Oh, man, let me tell you what, just doesn't get much better than that. But better yet, take my word for it right now. You can look it up after the show is over. This is Woods and Water, South Carolina on 94.5 WGTK, and I am your host, Roger Metz. You can listen to this show on your FM dial, download the free Conservative Talk 94.5 app, or listen to the live streaming feed at www.conservativetalk945.com. Just look on the right-hand side of the webpage and click the Listen Live link. Happy birthday to the Star Spangled Banner. Just heard a news flash on this last night. 200 years ago, War of 1812, Baltimore, Maryland, the bombardment of Fort McHenry, Francis Scott Key. Of course, most of you my age know that story. Some of you a little younger. If you don't get taught that in school, it's time for you to go do a little research project on it over the weekend. We'll talk about it next week. You can give me your report next weekend on Saturday. It's going to be a pretty big deal in Baltimore Harbor. They got the Blue Angels up there, lots of fireworks. I think it's going to be televised. So if you want something to watch tonight after you get done watching football, it might be something you want to tune into. Wow, it seemed like last week was in its own different way, one of the worst and one of the best. I won't do this often, but I would like to ask for your prayers for a friend of this show, a friend of mine. I won't mention his name because he'd probably try to hurt me later on, but just pray for him as the renegade, and that's his word, not mine. He's in the hospital, and one of those, you know, we really don't know what to do. We've never seen this, and kind of sit around and wait till we make our decision. He's hanging in there, lots of friends and family around, but you can never have enough people praying. So if you would, during this week, remember him. It looks like it could be a long road back after they decide how to treat him, so I'll give you some short updates later on. That's the worst of last week. The best of last week was Saturday after the show. I mean, how much can you cram so much good into such a short time? You know, in the space of 2 hours, I reconnected with an old friend of mine from back since third grade. Shot a few doves, spent some time with my daughter Taylor, and watched my lab Sophie make her first retrieve. You know, Joel and I met back in third grade. We spent a lot of time playing par three at Mr. Dill's in Greer. Now, a lot of you out there don't know where Mr. Dill's was, but because some of you know it by the names of Home Depot, Chick-fil-A, Bilo, and Fats Cafe, but that used to be a par three golf course. And we spent a ton of time up there. However, I'm proud to say I've never played a full round of 18-hole golf course. Just par three. We fished and hunted a lot together when we were younger. But, you know, it kind of drifted away from each other, and everybody out there knows how that happens. Anyway, we reconnected a couple months ago, and he invited me to go dove hunting. So we got to this field about 5, and wouldn't you know it, boy, the lightning started popping. The rain came down. But it was good. You know, Taylor and Sophie played around while Joe and I caught up, and I think it was sometime after 6:15 before we even got out on the field. A few birds flying around, and it really started out bad. I can always tell when I haven't picked up a shotgun in a while. I missed the first two birds, 3 shots each. Not a good way to start out. It got better. I finished up. I only shot it, I think, 4 more birds whole afternoon. Not a whole lot that late flying, but I picked up a single and then doubled up, which was always kind of restores your faith and your shooting ability. But I guess the best part of the whole 2 hours watching Sophie make her first retrieve. You know, sadly, it was not a bird I shot. Joe got that bird, and, you know, I had not worked with Sophie this summer. She didn't run from the shot. She didn't bolt. She didn't see the bird fall either, which you hate, you know, to send them after a bird they haven't fell. But we walked her close, and her nose took over from there. And I can't imagine having a nose that sensitive. You know, there's a statistic out there. The Labradors have a nose that is 25 times more sensitive than mine. And it really didn't take her but a few seconds to find the dove. She got more excited, nosed the bird a bit. I encouraged her, you know, come on, Sophie, bring it to me. She picked up the bird, and she followed us all the way back to our stands. She never chewed the bird. She never mouthed it. She dropped it once, spit out some feathers, which that's normal. Dogs just don't like dove feathers. Ducks are a lot better. Duck feathers don't come off in their mouths, but dove feathers they do. You know, I've been a dog person all my life. We had beagle. We always had a beagle hanging around the farm growing up, and I would hate to guess how many miles I've walked behind pointers, setters, Brittany's, Boykins, German Shorthairs, all bird hunting. You know, we got our first lab, Allie, about our 6-month wedding anniversary, I guess you'd say, if you call that an anniversary. 6 months after we got married, and there's been a lab under our feet ever since, with a couple little gaps in between. I've never looked at dogs as children. That doesn't mean I haven't been proud of them. You know, watching a setter pup, that first time he decides he isn't going to catch that wing you're teasing him with, and he freezes and makes that first point, and watching another setter honor another dog's point, along with seeing your lab make her first retrieve, it'll make you proud. Not that I had anything to do with that natural instinct, but just knowing that you helped bring it out and control it. So, I shot my 41st consecutive opening day of dove season, reconnected and made plans to get back together with an old friend, spent some time with my daughter, and now my Labrador, now I have a Labrador that just might earn a room and board for the next 10 years or so. That's the best of last week. Today, it's going to be another busy show. Joe Ellen Wilson from the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust will be here, along with South Carolina DNR biologist Pam Corwin. Now, Pam, if you've heard of the Freshwater Angler Recognition Program, she has drawn all the fish that will go on their certificates. Very talented artist. She's going to be here to talk a little bit about the program and her artistry. So stay tuned, and because it's going to be a good one. And let's see what's going on the calendar for this week. Tomorrow morning, if you don't have anything to do, there's a sunrise hike at Table Rock. Be there early. You know, 3 a.m. is when they're starting. And it says bring your own BYOT, bring your own thermos, because there's no coffee shop at the top. I looked. It's going to be rainy tonight, maybe a little bit cloudy tomorrow. Still be a fun thing to do if you want to get up early in the morning. 3 a.m. to 10 a.m. Sunrise hike at Table Rock State Park up in Pickens. Lake City, South Carolina, 2014 South Carolina Tobacco Festival. And this is one of those where the barbecue takes over. They've got a Thursday. It's the 18th through the 20th. Actually, to the 21st. I guess the 21st is a golf tournament, which doesn't interest me at all. But Thursday, they got a cornhole tournament, a watermelon carving and seed spitting contest. Friday, they got a 24-hour catfish tournament from Friday morning at 11 a.m. to Saturday at 11 a.m. 7 to 8, they have a barbecue cook-off, a wing throwdown. Street dance, music afterwards. Saturday, got the barbecue cook-off, helicopter rides, which would be really cool. Barbecue tasting for you as a participant. And that's all down at Lake City. Lake City is just a little bit south of Florence. So if you're going down towards the beach, be a good thing to be at. Oh, let's see here now. South Carolina Waterfowl Association Greenville Conservation Dinner and Auction, Friday, September 19th at St. George Greek Orthodox Church, 6 p.m. 45 per single, 60 per couple. Go support. Thank you for your support of South Carolina Waterfowl Association. Malden, September 26th and 27th, Malden Barbecue Cook-Off at the Malden Cultural Center on Butler Road. Woo boy. It's 6 to 9 on Friday night. The Anything But competition, which if you like barbecue, and these people are good cooks, they always cook other stuff in an Anything But. You might get wings or stews or anything. Those are good too. You've got some music, Mac Arnold and Plate Full of Blues. Saturday from 11 to 3, you've got the barbecue cook-off, Kids Zone, the Royal Scotsman Band, and of course, you know, food is served while supplies last. That's right down in Malden. Let's see. 12th Annual Rumble in the Jungle King Mackerel Tournament, Friday through Sunday, September 26th through the 28th. That's at Little River Inlet. Shotgun start at 7 a.m. Lots of payouts. In fact, I think one thing here is $35,000 for first place. That may not be true. It's kind of cut off there. Fun for the whole family, and it's the peak of the fall king mackerel season. Mountain Creek Trail hike up at Paris Mountain State Park, September 27th from 1 to 4. Says it's an interpretive 3-mile hike up and back, reading the stories told by the woods. Be a good thing for the family to do. And, hey, that's it. I got a couple more. I'll probably fill in at the last segment of the show because we're going to be busy here the next two. So. Well, that segment didn't end just quite like we wanted it to. Oh, me. Oh, what I was saying was I've got a couple, few more little things that I'll talk about at the end of the segment. But right now, live from, I guess, Jo Ellen, are you in Florida somewhere?
I am, yes.
Oh, wow. So we have Jo Ellen Wilson with the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust on the line with us. Jo Ellen, we appreciate you taking a little bit of time on Saturday to come on the show with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you have a good time in Georgetown?
I had a great time in Georgetown. Great guys, great anglers, and y'all know how to have fun.
Yes, we do. I'll give us that. We know how to have fun when we go fishing.
I felt right at home.
That's good. That's good. I know when they originally contacted me and said, we want to talk to you about South Carolina tarpon fishing. I says, guys, you got the wrong person up here. I said, I don't do it. I said, but I know some people and I hope those people you met down there will help you as you do your thing here in South Carolina.
Absolutely. Yeah. Not only do they really know about the fishery and what was going on up there, they're interested in hearing what's going on down here. So it's cool to really see how those fish compare in South Carolina to the ones in Florida.
And you know, most people I bet listening to me here in the upstate probably don't know that we have a tarpon fishery in South Carolina. But I guess it really hasn't come to the fore, but in the last 3 or 4 years, I guess, when I've noticed a lot of the guides in Charleston are really going out and buying bay boats instead of flat boats to run those tarpon trips out, and they're actually catching tarpon. I mean, J.R. Waits went 1 for 2 yesterday and caught another one today.
So, wow, I mean, that's pretty phenomenal.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be the trend is, you have those little skiffs, and now you're moving into a bay boat. So, hey, tarpon are hot right now.
That's it. That's it. The hotter the weather, the bigger that mullet run is, the hotter the tarpon fishing. All right, Jo Ellen. I had no clue who the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust people were until I ran into them at ICAST. So what is the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust, and what's their mission?
Perfect. So Bonefish and Tarpon Trust is a nonprofit organization, and they really deal with conservation and enhancement of 3 species globally, which is bonefish, tarpon, and permit. And we do this through scientific research. A lot of time it's a misconception about conservation organizations coming in and, you know, they want to shut down the fishery. That's not true. I mean, we're actually all anglers. I grew up fishing, especially for tarpon. So we really want to conserve that fishery so that generations can fish for these 3 species.
Now, granted, we don't have the former or the latter, the bonefish or the permit, but we do have the tarpon, so we're good. Why is BTT in South Carolina?
So not only do you guys have, it seems like fairly new, maybe just a couple decades, that y'all have been fishing for the adult tarpon, but in the past couple of years, it's been brought to our attention that y'all have juvenile tarpon as well, which is about the 4-week-old to about 2-year-old class of fish, and we didn't really know that they existed as far up as South Carolina.
And you would have thought our waters would have gotten too cold to support them.
Exactly. That's kind of what we thought, is that was at the top of their range. We know that the adults, they go all the way up to the Chesapeake, you know, from the Gulf of Mexico.
Okay.
They can handle those colder temperatures, even though they may not prefer them.
Right.
But juveniles, especially in Florida, they stay in one location for 2 to 3 years. They're really not migratory. So that's why in South Carolina, we figured with those harsh winters, they wouldn't really be able to overwinter. And we still don't know if they do, but they're coming in the summer. So whether they overwinter or not is something to be seen.
All right. Now tell us, now I probably got this out of sequence. What exactly do you do for BTT?
So the focus of my job really is juvenile tarpon habitat, mostly research and then also education like I'm doing today. But I'm just graduating with my master's degree. My research through BTT was focusing on a juvenile tarpon population in Florida, and it was before restoration. So
okay,
we really wanted to look at these fish, abundance, survival, growth, you know, how fast they grow. Then what they'll do is they'll restore the sites. It's an old golf course. So it's been altered, and they're in these golf course ponds. So they'll restore that site, and then we'll be able to take a look afterwards and see how those change, see if the growth gets better, why it's better, those type of things.
And I know when we were down in Georgetown, and Cheech seemed to put together a great thing. I think they had 25 boats. And one of the interesting things that I heard while I was there, and you can confirm or deny this, is that the money raised in South Carolina for the BTT through the tarpon tournaments stays here in South Carolina.
That's exactly right. So, so a few things that BTC is doing in South Carolina. Number one, with the adult, actually any size tarpon, we're taking scales.
Okay.
So with the scales, it's basically genetic material. You can go to our website and request the scale kit. But what we can do is once we know the size and the location, we can kind of see how they're interrelated. We can see if tarpon from Florida are related to tarpon in South Carolina. Also, we can see if tarpon from the adult tarpon fishery in South Carolina, if they're related to the juvenile. So maybe the juveniles that you guys have there are really being washed in from Florida or somewhere else. So it's really the connectivity of it. So that's one thing, you know, that you're funding. We're paying for that type of stuff that goes on in South Carolina. Also, like I said, I'm doing restoration down in Florida.
Right.
We really want to do some juvenile tarpon restoration up in South Carolina. Some of these habitats that the juveniles are in, you know, there are these impoundments, and y'all have managed quite a bit for waterfowl.
Rice
which we
impoundments.
Really don't have down here.
Yes.
Right. So in your impoundments, you're draining those and then burning and then planting. Well, it's not real conducive to juvenile tarpon. So even if they could over winter, they may not really have the opportunity.
Okay.
So we'd really be able to tag some fish out there. I was actually going to University of Florida, down in Florida, doing my research.
Right.
So BTC would be able to fund a graduate student from University of South Carolina. So it really, yeah, it does. It stays within your community, the funding that stays there.
And that's what you like to hear when you're making a contribution to BTT, whether it's by entering the tournament or just a random donation. You want to make sure that money comes back to where you live and where you fish.
Absolutely. Yeah, so not only will I be somewhat of a liaison, you know, for all things tarpon to BTT, you guys can also have a student, and they're kind of your go-to for any South Carolina tarpon.
Great. What, and we covered why South Carolina tarpon, and basically you're doing DNA printing then, aren't you, on the different
Absolutely.
Populations?
So with tarpon, even though we don't need to go to this label or this level, their genetics work just like a human fingerprint. You can tell an individual fish.
Okay.
Now, this isn't the same with all species of fish, but it is with tarpon. So we can get down close to it, you know, cost more money to go farther genetically, but
right.
we can get down close enough to see if they're coming from the same population. Especially in the Gulf of Mexico, they kind of show up at different times throughout the Gulf of Mexico, the Yucatan, Texas, and down the Florida Gulf Coast. So we think it's one big population.
Okay.
Kind of circling the Gulf.
Okay.
So what's going on the East Coast, we're not quite sure. So we'll be able to tell that connectivity. And like I said, between the adults and the juveniles as well.
Well, I mean, and our tarpon go up and down the coast within the months of July and maybe September, chasing the mullet runs. And if they're chasing it up the coast, you'd think they are coming from somewhere down south, and if they're going all the way to the Chesapeake, then that's probably one big family, too.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, those tarpon that you're fishing for in the Keys in April and May might be the same tarpon that you're fishing for in South Carolina in August.
And let me be clear about this to the people who are listening. This is not your classic tarpon fishery. I mean, I've fished the Everglades and a lot in Florida, and there y'all have the spectacularly clear water, and you're fishing a pod of fish that you can see, or you're fishing a laid up tarpon under the edge of the mangroves. Here in South Carolina, we get a couple of different types, but it's none of the really sight fishing like you do down there. It's more of you got two schools. You got, the big horse mullet under a balloon, chunks on the bottom, or I know I talked to Tucker Blind. He chases those schools until he sees fish pounding the mullet, and he's throwing swim baits at them.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of playing the lottery at that point. If you're in a field of mullet, you got to try to entice them with something different.
And
but I will say that those fish that I saw when I was in Georgetown last month,
yeah.
Oh, they're way bigger, man, way bigger than the ones in Florida.
Oh, really?
They're so fat, they're feeding. Yeah, for the length that they are,
right.
They have so much bigger girth.
How many, I didn't get final numbers. Would they have like 7 or 8 fish caught?
More than that.
We did.
So the tournament was 2 days,
okay.
With Friday being longer and Saturday somewhat of a half day. And they, I think 9 landed
okay.
on Friday and 6 on Saturday.
Wow. How many, were you around any of them while they were landed? I mean, I know you were going out.
Unfortunately, no.
Okay, okay.
I was fishing myself, so it's somewhat secretive.
Okay, yeah. Except for, I forget who it was that was saying, well, here's where you need to go, right there. And there were, I know there were several guys that were leaning in listening. And I wonder if that was a red herring. And we're going to get all, we're going to get about 5 or 6 boats to go right here to the one spot. And we're going to keep my little space secret over here.
Exactly.
Fishermen are bad about that sort of thing. Okay, the size tarpon we're catching off South Carolina. What were some of the sizes that were caught during the tournament? I know they're big fish.
Yeah, definitely over 100 pounds.
Okay.
That were caught in the tournament.
How old is a fish that big?
You know, that's a great question. So let me start at the smaller end of the spectrum. So a little bit of life history about tarpon is that they spawn in the summers here in Florida. And tarpon form big aggregations. So these are the big ones that you see, the 100 pounds plus.
Right.
And they go offshore, and they broadcast spawn, which means that they just shoot their sperm and eggs out into the open water, and that's the end of their parenting.
Okay.
So then tarpon, then they begin the larval stage. They look like an inch-long clear worm, and they've got to make their way all the way back into the estuary, up into rivers, creeks, where it's soggy, smelly. And then that's where they turn into kind of the juveniles,
right,
which I deal with, which look like the miniature counterparts.
Which jump when you catch them.
Of a tarpon, exactly. Right. So yes. Those guys, you know, it's strange. These fish, their longevity is upwards of 80 years. So it's kind of like the time span of a human. You have something like a sailfish, which is 5-6 feet long in its first year. Tarpon are only about 12 inches long.
Okay.
And you got redfish, they're reaching maturity at about 2 years old. Tarpon take about 8 to 10 years to reach maturity. So a fish that's 100 pounds, so the bigger ones are females because they've got to be able to carry those eggs.
Right.
Males don't need to get that big.
Right.
So a fish that's 100 pounds could be anywhere from 10, 12 years old, you know, to 60 years old, depending on how the growth and the food availability goes from up there.
It's incredible.
But it really takes a long time, which, you know, also if you have somewhat of a demise in the juveniles, it's not going to represent itself in the adult fishery for decades.
For decades. That's
exactly
right. Yeah,
which is kind of crazy to think about.
Now, do tarpon have game fish status pretty much along their range in the United States now?
You know, it's really spotty. So there's places where they're really tight. In Florida, they tighten down a lot, especially because we have the Boca Grande fishery is really one spot. I mean, it's a few nautical miles.
Right.
Those fish are breeding. That's why they're coming there. That's why they're easier to catch because they're in big schools. They're feeding. So as far as you can only keep them with a tag, doesn't matter the size, but typically you can only keep them for a record or some reason like that. You can't even bring them out of the water now, which typically, you know, you have that glory angler shot where you pull them on the boat.
Now you got to get in the water with them.
Yeah. But then you go to places like Louisiana, and they have no regulation.
Okay.
So so if it's the same population that we think, you know, things that go on in Florida affect the South Carolina tarpon fishery.
Right.
And things that go on in South Carolina affect Florida.
Lots of information here. All right, quickly, we've got about 15 or 20 seconds. What can the average angler do to help you out if they're tarpon fishing, if they see tarpon? What do they need to do?
First and foremost is you can take a scale, right?
Okay. John,
if you can request a scale kit. Second, if you know juvenile tarpon, email us. Website is btc.org. We're really interested in mapping the location. And third is donate. Like I said, most of the funding that comes from South Carolina is going to stay in South Carolina.
Joellen, wonderful to talk to you again. I enjoyed meeting you. You know, if there's ever a place on a boat on a tarpon trip down there with BTT, you be sure to let me know.
Oh, you know it.
Thanks. I appreciate you calling in. I'll be in touch with you soon.
Perfect. Thanks.
Bye. Wow, we're going to need to work on our endings because I totally forgot to ask y'all to hang on through the break and come back on the other side. Oh, me. But anyway, we're back on Woods and Water, South Carolina. Hang on because we're shifting from saltwater tarpon all the way across to freshwater fish here in South Carolina. And on the line with us, we have Pam Corwin. Pam, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good. Pam is a biologist with the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources down in Bonner, South Carolina. And back at the FLW Cup, we were both volunteers at the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources Kids Art Table. And we just started talking, and I was blown away. Just to be honest with you, I have never seen talent like what you've got.
Oh, thank you.
And I know you're not an expert on it, but the Department of Natural Resources this year, and I expect this was in response to a couple of, oh boy, so can we say judgment calls on new record catfish and that sort of thing. They introduced the angler recognition program.
Yes.
And you are the artist of record for the South Carolina Angler Recognition Program. If you go to the Department of Natural Resources website, pull up that program, you'll see three pictures right now, which is the largemouth bass, the blue catfish, and the crappie. And you drew all of those.
Yes, I drew all those and painted them.
And you just finished up the brown trout and delivered it to Columbia this week.
I did. And the difference, I guess, between with a lot of artists is they're not going to, they're just going to take a picture and paint it. And when you, like for the brown trout, for example,
right,
most people are going to think it's a western brown trout. So they're going to paint a western brown trout. So for each species in South Carolina that we have a certificate for, I actually wanted to do the habitat that they're going to be found here in South Carolina.
Correct.
I want the watercolor.
Okay.
And then, like, our brown trout look a little different here in South Carolina versus somewhere else. So I wanted to make sure I got every fish, every picture is from South Carolina.
And what you had is you got people to take underwater pictures, essentially, or try to take underwater pictures, so you would have just the right picture to use as your model. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
And I noticed if you look at the brown trout that you sent me, he's eating something or he's after something, which really yes. makes it cool. So if anybody gets into that brown trout, you need to look and see what he's fixing to eat. Now the bass is chasing a sunfish. Catfish is just hanging out. The crappie's waiting to ambush, but that brown trout's going after a stonefly. And I think that's the coolest picture I've seen of a brown trout. Tell us about the angler recognition program, if you would.
All right. Well, there's four different categories, and one of the four categories is called the Fantastic Angler, and it's youth under 16 years of
okay.
age. And then the rest of them, you have your trophy fish, your master angler, and then your elite angler.
Okay.
Starting with the Fantastic Angler, you just need one trophy size fish of each species, and then for that, you get your certificate, which is the art that I've you can see on the website.
Right.
And then you get a patch. You get your photo on Facebook and inclusion on the website.
And for
if
kid.
You just have, yeah, that's just for 16 and under. But for adults, you know, for us,
right?
If you just catch one fish, one of the each of the species, which mm-hmm. includes the blue catfish, the brown trout, the rainbow trout, crappie, either black or white, the largemouth bass, and striped bass, you get the certificate of whatever species you turn in, your photo on Facebook, and then an inclusion on the website.
Right.
However, if you want to continue on and be one of these overachievers,
right. yes.
You can become a master angler or an elite angler. The master angler is one trophy-sized fish of each of the five species, and then the elite angler is five or more trophy-sized fish in one of the species.
And there are specific weight and length minimums for each of these species.
Yes,
so,
there is.
If you're going to chase one of these all five species, you're going to spend some time catching fish.
Yes. And the good thing about the program, if you do decide to do the Fantastic Angler, we want to get our youth involved.
Of course.
There are different weights and lengths for the Fantastic Youth versus just us regular adults.
Okay. Okay. I see those. Yes.
And then at the end of the year, they have the Big Fish of the Year Award.
Okay.
And it's presented to the largest fish reported for each species, for both youth and adult.
Youth and adult.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all about getting those kids involved in fishing.
Yes.
Now, let's see. I guess your blue cats, you're pretty much going to have to go, what, mid-state for those? Santee area?
Yes. Of course, Santee country.
Yes.
That's what everybody's known for the blue cats.
That's it. And, of course, your largemouth are spread all over.
Yeah.
Crappie, pretty much anywhere you have a brush pile in any of these big lakes, you got crappie. Your brown trout. Now, if you're going to go brown trout and rainbow trout, you're going to have to go to the mountains. Or I guess Sluta River. I guess down below the tailwaters. Now, on the brown rainbow trout, do they specify at all whether it's hatchery release fish or wild fish? Is there any differential there?
No, not really. A lot of people will go behind a hatchery stocking truck and, you know, catch them. Because a lot of people, the general public, don't know how to tell a difference between a hatchery and a stockfish. Now, if you go to a hatchery and stick your line in the water and try to catch one of the broodfish, that doesn't count.
You're probably going to get in a little trouble with that and have your other certificates taken away from you. Okay, that's the program, and like I said, I think it came into being for a very good reason, just like an honorable mention. Yeah, you caught a nice fish. It wasn't quite, you know, top spot in the state. Let's talk about your artistry, because that's just these pictures. Now, these are not paints. You were telling me this is a different kind of pencil. Isn't it a colored pencil drawings?
The ones for the certificate are all watercolors.
They're all watercolors. I had it exactly wrong then. Which is about par for the course for me. I'll either have it all right or all wrong. So you are watercoloring for those.
Yes. Everybody likes the watercolors, so I stuck with that. The only thing about watercolors is if you make a mistake, there's not really any going back versus like painting with oil paint or acrylic paint. You can paint over it.
Okay.
Watercolor, you make a mistake, you're done.
You're done. How long did it take you to do the brown trout? Because I saw it in stages.
The brown trout probably took me about 90 hours. When I first started out, the catfish was about 60 hours, but it's not very detailed. But that was the very first painting that I had done since high school.
Which is amazing, because that's how many years? Six?
I graduated 10? In 2003, and yes. I did the catfish last year.
So after a 10-year hiatus from drawing and all that, she comes back and paints. It's just amazing. I saw the brown trout and you showed me the stages that you had done, and then you sent me a halfway stage and then finally the completed one this week, and I was just, it was incredible. Now, is watercolor your favorite or do you like the pencil drawings better?
I like watercolor because I'm different. I'm not a traditional watercolorist. I like mine to look very neat and realistic. But I like pencil because it allows you a little bit more control if you make a mistake. So it's either out of the paints, I like watercolor. Out of pencils, I like, you know, colored pencil.
Okay. Now, this is just something you took on your own, right?
Yes. Amanda and Lorianne kind of asked me to do it, and I'm like, absolutely. And, they paid for my supplies, and I'm, doing this for the program.
90 hours to paint a fish.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Because I'm so detail-oriented.
I know you are. And you'd have to be. Trust me.
Yes.
You would have to be to do what you do.
There's so many anglers out there and guides and fish heads. They're just like, they want to nitpick at everything. They're like, is that scale in the right place? Is the coloration right? So that's what I wanted to make sure I captured.
And I think you did. I think it's a job well done. But now you do other things besides fish. Now you've got a whole commissioning business where people can send you. I saw your were those two Chesapeakes I think you painted, or that you?
There was two, the Chesapeake Retriever and the Golden Retriever.
And the Golden Retriever.
And then I did the Drocktar that had the duck in his mouth.
Right, and you sent me a message this week that said you were going to be one of the first DNR employees to actually submit a waterfowl. Painting for the waterfowl
I'm
stamp?
I'm hoping to.
You're
that's
hoping to?
Super secret, but yeah, I'm hoping
I'm
to.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Blew the lid off of that one, too.
That's okay. I got to get my portfolio up so that I can submit some artwork, and I'm hoping to do the federal duck contest next year.
Wow. That's huge.
And I'm hoping to also be at the Southeastern Wildlife Expo this coming February.
Are you going to be there displaying then?
Yes, I'll probably either, if I'm not displaying as an artist, I'll be working.
Okay.
Because Department of Natural Resources, we always have a booth or something.
Yeah, you're always all over that one. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, you do this for DNR. You took that on.
Yes.
But you also do commission paintings and drawings and that sort of thing. We got just about a minute left. So tell us how people can get a hold of you, and if they want to get you to do one of their drawing for them.
Well, I do have, for those that are creative and savvy with the internet, I have an Etsy business, and that's ETSY, which is Etsy.
Right.
And my shop is called Equus Fancy, like the horse, E-Q-U-U-S, and
right.
Fancy. And most people find me through there. I do have my own website,
okay.
And it's PamelaCorwinGalleries.com.
Pam,
go ahead.
We're running out of time. I appreciate you coming on. I want you to send me a link for your website so I can put it up on the Woods and Water South Carolina page.
I sure will.
I enjoyed being around you that day, and I look forward to talking to with you more.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks, Pam.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hang on. We'll be back. And welcome back to Woods and Water South Carolina. At least I got that segment ending and the intro of the next one right. That's what happens when you have people on. It's just a lot of information you have to get through. Man, it's great to see outdoors women like that involved. And Pam's not getting paid for this. She's doing this just because she enjoys doing it, and they're incredible pieces of work. If you're out there listening, go to the DNR website, pull up the angler recognition program, and look at some of those pictures. And the brown trout's not even up there yet. I guess it would be a picture of it. It's got blue tape around it. So I guess that's the final copy, working copy. She sent me a copy of that. It's incredibly, incredibly detailed. I'm glad people are creative like that, because I certainly am not. I lost all that somewhere along the way, or never had it to begin with. Probably never had it to begin with. I said earlier I wanted to get a few little plugs in here for things that I didn't get on the calendar. One of those is the South Carolina State Parks has just opened their Making Memories Fall Photo Contest. South Carolina Wildlife Federation does a photo contest every year, and it's, four categories, and it's just during a certain time. South Carolina State Parks actually has a seasonal photo contest. So they had a spring, summer, fall, and winter. The fall one, September 1st through November 30th, South Carolina State Park website, scmakingmemories.com. It's real easy. Email address, select the category, and landscape falls is what's on here. I'm not sure what the other categories are. But, for you photographers out there, be a good, let's see. You could win one of three seasonal prizes worth more than $200 and a grand prize worth more than $1,000. So, all you amateur photographers out there that like to take good pictures, there's a something you might want to check into. I wanted to get a plug in for the South Carolina chapter of the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. On the 20th of September, they are having a kickoff for a cure. This is the second annual kickoff for a cure this September 20th at One Greenville. That's downtown. Kickoff for a cure brings together cheering football fans to enjoy watching football games, including Clemson versus Florida State. It's an away game, so all you Clemson fans, you can get down there and tailgate, have a good time for a good cause. Our goal is to raise at least $30,000 for the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation from this event. So for the fishermen, you can contribute to the BTT. And by the way, the BTT has a great magazine. I'll finish up with this first. So cystic fibrosis. Also, the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, you remember we talked about the Red Bone Fishing Tournament. Just couldn't make that happen this year. I talked to them last week and said, you know what, I'm just going to start that much earlier next year. But they do have a Sporting Clays tournament down in Charleston the week after the Red Bone. So that would put it the 27th of October. I'll confirm those details, but they have a Sporting Clays tournament. It'll be their second annual Sporting Clays tournament, which would be a good one to get involved with. It's a lot less money. We'll have to see how that goes. But anyway, kickoff for a cure on September 20th. Doors open at 6 p.m. and at 8 o'clock, you got Clemson versus Florida State. And I just checked. I don't think there's a score on the Georgia-South Carolina game yet. The Bonefish and Tarpon Trust have a great magazine. If you're like me, I like outdoor magazines. Even more so if they have lots of pictures, so I don't have to read a lot of articles, because I don't have a lot of time to read articles these days. But the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust, people have a Bonefish and Tarpon Journal. It's really nice. I don't know how it says 2014 edition, so maybe they only have one. But it's good. It's got some great pictures. Boy, I tell you. Some of these places you would kill to go to. Trust me. Clearwater, tarpon, bonefish. That's that. But yeah, it's great to see, you know, women in the outdoors. It gives me hope. I've got a daughter who will be, oh, heavenly day. She might even be a fighter pilot or a biologist, a freshwater or saltwater fisheries biologist. So it's good for them to have role models like the two ladies we just talked to. And I'll probably have Pam come back on. She is a great, I got a story here from the Post and Courier down in Charleston about her. She'll be one that I'll want to have back on because she's just a unique individual. Last week when we ended up, I had some news here. We talked about some deer hunts. I said I was going to bring them back on. So we got a September 26th deadline to apply for the Manchester State Forest Youth Deer Hunt. They're going to have three hunts down in Manchester State Forest. That's in Sumter County, October 11th, November the 1st and the 15th. The deadline's 5 o'clock Friday, the 26th. Age requirements, 17 and younger. Remember, for any of these deer hunts, if you're over the age of 16, you have to have a hunter education card or certificate. And while I was on my way here to the show, I got an email from Henry Barnett. He is the head, let me get down here where he gives his credentials, Regional Education Coordinator, Oconee, Pickens, Anderson, Abbeville, McCormick, and Edgefield Counties, sent me an email just reminding us that if you need a hunter education class before you can hunt this year, it's not too late. They have September 20th at Clemson at the DNR offices, the 27th in Belton at the train depot, October 4th, Foothills Community Church in Seneca, October the 25th, DNR offices in Clemson, November 1st, Calhoun Falls State Park in Calhoun Falls, the 8th at DNR Clemson headquarters, and December the 6th, at DNR headquarters in Clemson. So, you know, for one of these youth hunts, you just kicked the bucket and moved from 16 to 17 and now you're an old person. You have to have a hunter education card. It's not too late to get one. And I encourage you to take one, make one is a big thing. This is actually not part of take one, make one, but it is a youth hunt. So you've got that one in Manchester State Forest. Then you've got the Belfast WMA youth hunt, which is right down here in Newberry County. And they're going to have three there, October 11th and 18th and November the 8th. That, again, is a Friday, September 26th deadline, age 17 and younger. None of these hunts cost you anything. That's the beauty of them. They're free. And you're going to some great places to hunt. I mean, Manchester is a good place to go. Belfast down here is, and I hate to say this, well, here it is right here. 10 youth participating in each hunt. Belfast WMA is a 4,664-acre tract located 10 miles northwest of Newberry. That's a big piece of land to be in South Carolina, especially in the upper part of the state. And it was, it's got a house on it and everything. So that's Belfast. And then we've got one more here. The Department of Natural Resources, in cooperation with the United States Air Force, Shaw Air Force Base down in Sumter, will conduct a special youth hunt at the Poinsett Electronic Combat Range in Sumter County. This hunt is scheduled for Saturday, November 1st, 15 kids, first come first, or it's actually a random drawing. Same age requirements, 17 and younger. Poinsett Electronic Combat Range, we talked about it earlier here on the show. That's where the Air Force goes to, their jets goes to shoot live strafing ammunition, drop dummy bombs, stuff like that. That would be a really cool place to hunt. Although I understand a lot of it is a Carolina Bay, and that can make it really tough to find a deer if you don't make a good shot. But at this one especially, they're going to have a check-in, a brief refresher course on hunter safety. Participants will be required to shoot their firearms at the rifle range before going on the hunt. So if you're a kid or you know of a kid, in addition to all the take one, make one hunts that Department of Natural Resources is sponsoring this year, you've got Well, there's, what, three hunts, six. So you've got another 7 hunts with the chance of making one of those in some great places, all free of charge, just for the going. So get your stuff together. Get your hunter education card if you need it, and go deer hunt. News from South Carolina. Shrimp baiting season opened yesterday at noon. So, and I know a lot of people are down there right now. The story starts out, recent sampling by DNR collected below average numbers of shrimp available for the fall harvest. It's heavy rainfall along the coast, and if you've had any friends down there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Wow, it's been brutal for them down there. But anyway, it's shrimp baiting season, 60-day season. Resident license, they're $25. They've got some, you know, 48 quarts head on, 29 quart head off per boat. Limit of 10 poles per boat. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, if you've never been shrimp baiting baiting for shrimp, you do it in the harbor and several places along the coast. It's fun. It's a lot of work. At the same time I saw this, I got a little message from Livingston's and Carolina Seafood down in McClellanville. The shrimp are starting to come in. They've got 10, 15 boats going out every day now. Shrimp are a little small. I'm going to wait till they get to that 15, 20 range. But, hey, you know, shrimp, it's a fun time with friends to go shrimping at night down in Charleston. And there was an article on South Carolina Sportsman from Terry Medowell about shrimp season, and he gives a couple of tips. You know, I make my bait balls at home before going, so when I get on the water, I'm ready to find shrimp. I don't make just barely enough bait balls. I make plenty, so running out is not an issue. I make my bait balls flat, pancake style, and that's simply because when the tide's rolling, the shrimp are moving, if you're throwing a round bait ball out there, your bait ball is going to get rolled along the floor somewhere, and it's not going to be there when you go to cast on it. It's going to be 30, 40 yards away from your shrimp pole. So make them flat. That way when they hit, they kind of sink to the bottom and they don't go anywhere. Test the water before committing to a place. And this is hard to do when you're setting up poles. He says, you know, shrimp move around a lot. And if you caught them in a place the day before, he says, I'll stick one or two poles in, place one bait ball, wait a few minutes and make a test cast. If I like what I see, I'll stick around. If not, I'll start going somewhere else. Know the tides. Man, everything in salt water is dependent on the tide movements. It's a key to shrimping to know where you need to set up. You know, don't want your bait, you don't want your poles high and dry at low tide, and you don't want them covered up at high tide. So there's an art to it. If you have never been before, it's always a good idea to get somebody that goes regularly to take you the first time or go with them, see how it does. Gauge the wind and tide. Shrimping is best on a moving tide and slowest on the slack water time between tides. And one of these days I don't know. I may go back shrimping. I may not. I may be done. In fact, I couldn't even try and find my shrimp poles. But there's a chance here. Fishing's good. Shrimp season's in and teal season's in. So you could do a fish, a cast, a blast. I guess a blast comes first, cast comes second, and then shrimping at night, which could be a great weekend. You fit all that into one weekend and you've done something. Oh, let's see. We're going to get to all the hunting and fishing seasons. I apologize for not getting to those earlier. One little funny thing here from, women attacked each other with deer head. Two Huntingdon County women are facing criminal charges after they attacked each other with a taxidermied head of an antlered deer. Go figure. 47 and 64, both facing charges of simple assault. The argument eventually turned physical and the woman swung a deer mount at each other. How cool. Okay. Oh, man. Chuck for this week. When Chuck Norris crosses the street, the cars have to look both ways. I want to thank Joellen and Pam for being on the show with us today. Next week, don't know what's going to happen. I got a lot of things going on. I know I'll be down at World of Energy in the morning. I've got the segment on Take One, Make One Dove Hunt, a good one on coyotes coming up. I'm working on a schedule leading up to the FAW Cup show on October the 5th on NBC. You can check back on the Facebook page Friday and figure out what's going on. In the meantime, there's a lot going on outdoors. Cooler weather for hiking all across the state. You can go camping without lugging an air conditioner along with you. The fish are eating anything that swims by, getting ready for winter. Dove season's here till January. Archery season starts Monday. Teal season's open if you can find them. Rifle season for deer will be here. There's something out there you can enjoy doing or try to find or like to try. Can't you see? email me, roger@woodsandwaterstc.com. I'll try to help you any way I can. Whew, there's James. I told you it was going to be busy. Get outside. Travel the back roads when you can. Be careful when you're out there. And, hey, I'll be back here next Saturday. Look forward to having you around. Thanks. My mind.